Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Hello and welcome to the Leaders Toolbox here on Radio at Firehouse.com. The Leaders Toolbox show is hosted by Fire Chief Rich Gassaway. My name is Pete Matthews. I'm an editor here at Firehouse.com, and I would just like to thank you for joining us today. Just a real quick note before we get to this show. The last show, one of the points that we went over is the department having a mission statement. And we put a poll on Firehouse.com for all the attendees of the site to choose. And in total, we have 23% of those who responded say, yes, we do know the mission statement word for word. 46% say they do have a mission statement, but they do not know what it is word for word. 2% are in the process of developing a mission statement, and 26% say their department does not currently have a mission statement. Rich, do you have any quick words? I know a lot of it last month was about, you know, it is time to get one if you don't have one, being the new year and all.
Well, I'm pretty encouraged by the by some of those numbers. You know, it's about 69% of the folks who have at least have a mission statement, and with 23% of them saying they know it word for word, you know, that's pretty encouraging that they're plugged in. plugged in and know what's driving their department. Hopefully, those in the 46 range get reconnected and refamiliarized with their mission statement, and let's be hopeful that among those in the 26% range that didn't have one, that maybe they can take some of the things that we talked about in the last podcast and work toward getting one developed. All in all, I'm pretty encouraged by those numbers.
Okay, good. I was surprised that that many folks did have it. Again, you know, not everybody remembers it, but it's something to work on. So, well, let's get into the show today. We have a couple more questions, and if anybody does have any questions you'd like to have answered on upcoming shows, please do drop us an email. The email address is podcast@firehouse.com. Chief, the first question we have this week is relationships between firefighters and the fire chiefs. It says, the relationship I have with one of my fellow firefighters is like oil and water. I swear if something's red, he'll say it's blue just to irritate me. I usually find myself getting so angry that the confrontations erupt into an argument. With that, the results are never productive. I'm tired of it. What can I do?
Well, what he describes there, Pete, is not terribly unfamiliar probably to people that work in most firehouses and most fire departments, especially those who perhaps have firefighters who are on duty, because you spend so much time with each other in a firehouse that there's bound to, on occasion, be disagreements. Now, what you describe here sounds like something a little more than just an occasional disagreement. It sounds like this is happening on a pretty regular basis, and it's usually resulting in some arguments, which are certainly not productive, and it sounds like that the writer is acknowledging that this is not a healthy environment to be working in. And the first thing that I notice from what he says is it ends up irritating him, and he finds himself getting angry. The first thing I would do is encourage him to not let someone else push his buttons to the point where it makes him angry. He has control over his attitude, and if he gives that control to someone else, then he is losing the battle. Clearly, we've all seen people who try to push our buttons and on purpose try to get a response out of us. And if they know they can do it, some people are willing to do that just for the sake of the reaction. So this might be part of what's going on here, is this person might be just in his own twisted sort of way having some fun with this firefighter, saying, you know, it's really neat to see how stirred up I can get him over the smallest things. So, you know, if he says something, if you say it's red and he says it's blue, you got to decide, is this, you know, an issue worth taking up and, you know, having a discussion that's going to end up resulting in an argument? And you know, pick your battles as to what's really important to engage in this kind of debate. But in all cases, these debates shouldn't be ending up in these arguments and leaving this firefighter frustrated and angry. It's okay to disagree with folks, but it's not okay to be disagreeable with folks. And if he finds himself in a situation where someone that he's having to work with is being disagreeable, then that problem needs to be addressed. But before we get to how to address it, let's talk a little bit about why people have differences in their relationships. And, you know, this isn't the Dr. Phil segment of relationship management, but I think it is important to at least acknowledge that we're all unique people, individuals with different points of view and different opinions and different upbringings and different religious beliefs and different political beliefs. So it's not uncommon to think that among the folks that we work with, we're going to have some folks that we disagree with. We also have differing personalities. You know, you might have a kind of person who is a very detail-oriented person working with somebody who is not detail-oriented and just flies at the seat of their pants. Well, that's the potential for a rub between those two people. You might have an introverted person working side by side with a very extroverted person, and the introverted person is very quiet and reflective, and the extroverted person is very boisterous and charismatic and outgoing. Well, those two people might not get along because of differences that they have in their personality. One of the things I think that I would do is talk to this person in a way that is not confrontational. In other words, if this person were irritating me, if I were to walk up to them and say, you know, you really irritate me, and I don't like it when you do this, and it makes me angry, and I start couching my feedback or my discussion to them in all kinds of negative terms, it's going to end up in an argument, and I'm going to end up frustrated, and we're not going to make any progress because we're going to be right back to the problem that we started with. But if we could get this person to at least give us a few minutes of their time to have a discussion about it, and start out by telling them that we want to talk about how we get along in the firehouse, and talk about how it makes me feel, if I'm that firefighter, how it makes me feel when we end up having these unproductive arguments, and that I get irritated and frustrated, and it doesn't, you know, result in very much productivity, and ask that person what their take is on it. You know, you might find out they're saying, you know, now that you mention it, I find that rather irritating and frustrating too. And you might have some, that might be the beginning of common ground where two people say, you know what, let's agree that there are times when you can say things that are irritating to me and I can say things that are irritating to you. So when that happens, let's try to, you know, to take a time out or do something that keeps us from going down an unproductive path, because it isn't healthy for us, it isn't healthy for our shift or others who might be there listening to it, that's creating collateral damage with them. And chances are, if there's other people around, they are observing that the two of you don't get along. Now, when it comes to having these arguments or disagreements or confrontations, we got to remember that it takes two to tango. So even though we might think, well, it's the other person's fault, and it's their shortcomings, and it's their stubbornness, and it's, you know, their point of view that is the issue. You know, you come back to the original question of, you know, I say something's red and he'll say it's blue just to irritate me. Maybe it is blue. Maybe we're the ones that are seeing it wrong, but we don't like to look at the world that way. You know, when we have a disagreement with somebody, we like to see ourselves as right and them as wrong. And, you know, the fact that it takes two to tango or two to create an argument, maybe some of that issue is ours. Maybe it's our point of view. Maybe it's our demeanor. Maybe it's the way that we're approaching the particular problem. I would suspect that this firefighter would say, no, nobody gets along with this firefighter. Well, I hear that a lot too, because you want to have other people believe that you're the right one and they're the wrong one. But maybe it takes a little self-reflection, or maybe it takes a third person, a third party, another firefighter to intervene and say, let me make some observations about what I see in the behavior of both of you. You know, you behave this way, but you behave this way. And you say these things which are not very productive, but on the other hand, you over here, you're you know, contributing just as much to the problem. And sometimes it takes this outside person looking at this to have us realize that we're both contributing to this problem, that this isn't one-sided. Now, the chances are that out there in the world, in some of the firehouses, there are people who just are hard to get along with, and maybe don't get along with anybody, and you just happen to be one of them. You know, if everybody in the world would get along well with each other, there wouldn't be any divorce. And we know that's not true, because a lot of times folks do have irreconcilable differences where they can't get along. So, you know, if you're stuck with having to work with somebody that you can't get along with, you know, divorce, you can go through some legal proceedings and you know, split and go your own ways. Well, in the firehouse, maybe you don't have those options available to you. You can't necessarily quit, or they aren't going to necessarily want to leave the fire department either, just because the two of you aren't getting along. So you maybe don't have those options available to you. So you have to find some way to find middle ground to at least agree to disagree on these issues, and try to realize that every topic that you discuss doesn't have to result in one person being right and the other person being wrong. Maybe there's some place in the middle that you can meet and at least agree to not turn that into a battle.
What about the situation? I mean, if you're the chief of department and you know, you have a problem with firefighter Smith, is that something? Is it appropriate to dump that down to the assistant chief or even a captain and just say, you know, I don't want to talk to firefighter Smith anymore? You know, unless it's a very urgent matter, you're going to have to deal with him from now on. Is that an appropriate way to, I guess it mitigates the problem for you because you don't have to deal with it, but that could also cause more problems down the road if he gets more irritated or, you know, now he feels that you're just leaving him to the side, that you don't really want to work with him anymore.
Yeah, that doesn't solve the problem. You know, that's like, that kind of reminds me of a third grader type response. You know, I don't want to talk to you anymore, so I'll tell my friend to tell you something, because I don't want to tell you directly, so I'll tell my friend, and I know they'll come and tell you. That is not going to solve the problem. You know, when you have two people that have differences or issues with each other, the only way to resolve that is to have those two people come together to resolve that issue. You know, a good thing, if you're a chief out there and you're listening, you say, you know, I got somebody in my department that just irritates the heck out of me, and I don't like to deal with them. Then I'd say, well, get someone else, an assistant chief or someone maybe who is neutral to both of you, and ask them to facilitate a sit-down discussion with you and the person you're having challenges with. And, you know, if you're the five-bugle person in your department, it takes a great deal of maturity and professionalism to call in another person and say, you know, I'd like for you to mediate a discussion that I want to have with this person. And I need you there because sometimes I find myself in the presence of them getting frustrated and angry and yelling and saying things that I don't want to and behaving in ways that I'm not particularly proud of. And I need somebody there to just kind of play the referee so that we can get these issues out on the table and get them dealt with. And with a word of caution, you know, when somebody wants to argue with us, it's a conscious decision for us to want to argue back. We can choose not to argue. We can choose to walk away. We can choose to count to 10. We can choose our response. One of the advice I have for people, and it has worked very well for me, is when I'm in the presence of somebody who is really upset about something, the louder they raise their voice, the quieter I talk. So as they're pitching it up and getting louder and you know maybe spitting as they're talking, I just get quieter, and it just becomes to the point where they realize they're not getting to me. You know, it's kind of like a game. If they work me up, they win, and I'm not about to let them win. So I'm not about to let them work me up. And I also have found out through my life's experiences, the more I get worked up, the harder it is for me to keep good, sound judgment about myself. If I find myself getting worked up and angry and yelling, I find myself saying things that I regret. It might feel good at the moment, but later on I'm going to say, I should have never said that. That wasn't appropriate. It wasn't professional. It wasn't representative of who I am. Shame on me for letting myself get drawn into that fight like that. I should never have let that happen. And over the course of time, practice this, you find that your best defense is to not let them work you up to begin with. On the inside, you may be boiling, but on the outside, it's calm, cool, collected, professional, and you'll find out, too, that as they're yelling at you, they eventually do run out of breath. They'll run out of air, and they will calm down, or they'll leave and come back, or you can catch up with them later. But the best way, Pete, to deal with those problems are one-on-one, face-to-face with the person you're having the problem with. If you can't deal with it one-on-one, then ask somebody to come in and mediate to be the go-between person to help just facilitate those discussions. I would also try to focus on the behavior that's the issue and not personalities, you know, and that can be hard to do, but it's also important that we realize that people have differing personalities and we're not going to change them. Just because we don't like their personality or we don't like their political beliefs or we don't like their lifestyle, we're not going to change that. We have to learn, especially as we climb up the ladder to higher positions, we have to learn to be tolerant of all that variation that comes in our organizations because there's, you know, depending on the size of your department, you know, anywhere from 20 to 1,000 different people, and they're all going to bring their uniqueness, and it's just something that we have to develop a tolerance for.
Okay. It sounds like you just, yeah, calm, cool, and collect is the best way to go about it.
Absolutely.
And work with them, not against them. And as far as the moderator, do you recommend somebody else from the department or somebody from another agency or somebody that obviously that's going to remain neutral to both parties? But
I think the best person to have is somebody that is neutral to both parties. And, you know, if you could get the person you're having these disagreements with to say, you know, let's agree that it might be good to have someone else come into the room and try to at least facilitate so that we're not at each throat. Somebody that else in the room that we can talk with. You agree? Okay. Now, who should that be? I think that person should be somebody who's neutral to both. You know, and earlier I had said assistant chief, and then sort of bit my tongue, because if you're the chief and you're having problems with a firefighter, and you want to bring your assistant chief in to be the mediator, I think that's an unlevel playing field. I don't think it's fair to the firefighter now to have five bugles and four bugles in the firefighter, and the four bugle person who has to work with the chief day in and day out, thinking that he's going to be impartial and unbiased, and turn to the chief and say, "No, chief, you're wrong in this particular situation." That's probably not going to happen. So that maybe was not the best example of a person to bring in to be the mediator. But I think it should be somebody in the organization that both the chief and the firefighter can find common ground in, that they both respect, and that they realize isn't going to represent one person's side with any greater bias than the other person's. If it can't be somebody within the department, maybe it's somebody from outside the department. The important thing is it's just somebody that both of them can agree on, could do a good job to help facilitate, to find common ground. And it may not even need a facilitator. If they get to the point where they just agree that there's an issue, maybe they're able to sit down and talk it out. One of the biggest problems I see, Pete, is firefighter A and firefighter B have issues with each other, but neither one of them want to sit down and resolve it. I have a lot of credit to this person who says, "I want this resolved. I'm tired of this, and I want to see this get better." And I think that's taking the important first step of saying there's a problem and I want to see it fixed. There are a lot of folks out there who say, I have a problem with this person, but I'm not about to sit down and talk with them and try to resolve it because it's their issue. It's not my issue. And of course, you're not going to get anywhere when you want to, In that case, I'd say you're probably part of the problem. If you're not willing to at least sit down and try to talk it through.
Okay. All right, well, we'll take a quick break here on Radio at Firehouse, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Hello, and welcome back to the Leader's Toolbox here on Radio at Firehouse.com. The Leader's Toolbox is hosted by Fire Chief Rich Gassaway. Chief, we have another question in this week about the chief and the assistant chief, who are both set to retire within the next 3 years. And the question here deals with moving up in the department, moving up in rank. It says, "When that happens, I anticipate others within our department are going to be promoted, and this will create some officer opportunities. I am currently not an officer, but would like to be considered for a position when the chiefs do retire. What can I start to do now that would give me the advantage and edge over other candidates when these two opportunities come open?"
Well, I think that that particular person deserves a great deal of credit of realizing that the preparation for these kind of opportunities takes some time. All too often I see folks who don't give a lot of thought to their career advancement until a position comes open, and then they apply for the position, and then they go out and find four or five books on officer development and try to read them in a 14-day period in preparation for the promotional exam, and that is that's certainly not the way to go about preparing yourself for advancing through the organization. This person is identified an opportunity that they're anticipating to come in a 3-year period, and I think that's a good period of time in which to prepare themselves. Now, the one thing they didn't say is how long they've been on the fire department already. So I'm going to assume they've been on a few years and they have some firefighting experience. And I think that's important that before you move up into the officer's rank, that you spend some time getting your firefighter's experience. I think back to my days of riding on the ambulance, and the best paramedics were the ones who actually spent some time practicing as an EMT before they went to paramedic school. So they went to EMT school, They learned how to do basic skills. Then they went out of the field and practiced those for a year and became a really good EMT. And then they went to paramedic school. And comparatively, I've seen some folks who go from EMT school straight into paramedic school and straight onto the street. And then when they have somebody who's cut, and it takes, you know, a Band-Aid and or a bandage and some direct pressure and some elevation, they're going straight for IVs and doing all the advanced paramedic type stuff and overlooking the basic skill things that they should be doing, because they were so rushed through EMT class and straight into paramedic, they never spent a lot of time practicing and becoming a good EMT. So I think to become a good officer in the fire department, you need to spend some time practicing and becoming a good firefighter first. And I'm hoping that this person, well, they're obviously going to have at least 3 years in which to do that. So I would encourage them to continue to develop themselves as a good firefighter, learning everything that they can over these next 3 years about how to be good at all the firefighting skills that they're going to eventually have to become to supervise if they're going to get promoted. Now, as far as developing a advancement plan for this particular person or anyone who's aspiring to be an officer, I'd say the first thing to do is to access some resources that are out there of readily available and for free that they could use to develop a plan and a timeline for how to prepare. One of them that comes to mind is one that's available through the International Association of Fire Chiefs, and it's on their website. If you go under, I think it's publications, on their website, there's a handbook that they developed called the Officer Development Handbook. Now, this sounds like this book was written just for the person who has this question. It's the Officer's Development Handbook, and in that handbook, it takes them step by step through what kind of training and education would be good for a first-line supervisor, and then it goes on to a middle manager position, and then it goes on to senior management position, and then it goes on to the executive management position. So if this person is at the firefighter level and they want to best prepare themselves for their first-level supervisory officer position, what should I be doing? Go and download the Fire Officer Development Handbook, turn to the first section on first-line supervision development, and read it and see what it says are good training opportunities and educational opportunities to prepare yourself to be a supervisor. It's kind of like the playbook's written there for you. And then I would encourage you to make a timeline of, you know, what do I want to get done in the next 90 days, and in the next 6 months, and in the next year. And the reason for the timeline is something that you can use to keep yourself on task. Because if this person has 3 years, there may be 3 years worth of training and education that they need to do to become that supervisor, and they don't want to spend the first 6 months having not accomplished much and then find themselves having to rush and play catch-up to take advantage of this opportunity. And then, you know, imagine you set a 3-year course of action and then the chief and assistant chief retire after 2 years and you're just not quite there yet. So, you know, be careful about banking that 3 years might be the magic number, and he might be better off setting his sights on, say, what I can do in the next year, and then what can I do in the next 2 years, so that he has maybe a shorter timeline. Some other resources that are readily available to help firefighters see what training and education would be available is in the National Fire Protection Association, NFPA, there's a standard 1021, and in that's the standard for fire officer professional qualifications. So if you go to that standard, it also lays it out, the kind of things you need to have to be a Fire Officer 1, Fire Officer 2, Fire Officer 3, and Fire Officer 4, which which is equivalent to the IFC's handbook of, you know, your first line supervision, middle management, senior management, and executive management. The NFPA calls it, you know, Fire Officer 1, 2, 3, 4. And it lays out, again, a developmental plan for the course work and areas of expertise that you need to be well developed in to prepare yourself for promotion. Where can you go to find some free classes or low-cost classes? Maybe you don't have the money to go to college. Maybe your department isn't willing to, you know, do a tuition reimbursement or pay for that. Well, there are some pretty good resources out there that are low cost or no cost. And, you know, two that come to mind pretty readily for me is the National Fire Academy. And you can go to their website, and I think there's about 18 courses available to the through the National Fire Academy that are online courses that are free. And I know for sure that there's a supervision course, and then there's some courses about managing maydays and all kinds of topics that would be good things to learn, incident command type classes, and with different examples like townhouse fires and nursing home fires to kind of challenge you and take you through developing your incident management skills. And these are all free. They're all online, so you don't have to get in your car and drive to a campus. You have no cost. All you have is your commitment of your time and taking these courses. And as you complete them, you get a certificate that demonstrates that you've completed them. So you're starting to build a resume to prepare yourself for promotion. Another one is the Emergency Management Institute, EMI. And again, there, you know, there's a available information available on the website. If you go to the U.S. Fire Administration's website, you can get to the National Fire Academy and you can get to EMI. And there's all kinds of free online programs there, too, to teach you how to, you know, be an emergency manager. There's some hazmat training. There's some things on incident command, decision making, and problem solving. All kinds of really good resources that are free. The only investment you have is your time to take the program online. And certificates or credentials from EMI or the National Fire Academy carry a pretty good bit of weight in organizations. There's talking about some agencies that got some good reputations for putting out some quality training materials. So you know, it doesn't have to be college credit classes to be developing yourself. Another thing that I would do if I were thinking about wanting to be promoted, I would go to the chief and or the assistant chief and let them know what my interest is. Let them know that I'm interested. Don't assume that they know that I'm going to be interested in taking on a position of greater responsibility. In the process of letting them know, they may also have access to some resources. Or they might say, well, geez, now that I know that you're interested, here's a class or two I'd like to see you take that I think is really important. And maybe we'll help, you know, offset the cost of the class, or we'll give you some pay for your books, or you know, in some way help out. But if they don't know you're interested, they surely don't know to extend any you know, invitations to you to get this training. And you also would like to know from them, in their own point of view, the kind of things that are important in being prepared for supervisory positions in your department. Another thing you can do is, say you're a firefighter and the first level position is a lieutenant. Well, is there a job description for that lieutenant? If there's a job description for that position, and let's hope that there is, get it and look at it and see what it says are the minimum and desired qualifications for that position. And then set out to make sure that when that position comes open, you have those minimum and desired qualifications, and then maybe even a few more, you know, extras to set yourself apart from other candidates who might say, well, I'll get the minimum and then I'll stop there. You know, the minimum is all that I have to have. If you're going to really be serious about a promotion, you always want to have something to offer that sets yourself apart from other candidates. And you can't go wrong with education. I mean, once you get it, no one can take it away from you. It's always going to be there and always to your benefit. And even if you didn't get that promotion the first time you tried, you're going to be a smarter person and, as a result of it, a better firefighter and even better positioned for a promotional opportunity the next time it comes around. The one word of caution I would have for this person and all folks who are looking to do things to develop themselves for a position of greater responsibility is when you're going to go to school or take classes either online or the tech college or go to a regional fire school, that takes time and commitment. And you're going to have to decide, what am I willing to give up to be able to have the time to do this? Because you can't develop yourself in a half-baked style. You're going to have to decide, this is what I want to do. It's important for me. It's important for my career. It's important for my long-term ambitions. And then you're going to have to decide, what do I have to give up to be able to have the time to do this and do it right? I mean, you can go online and take a course and maybe just go straight to the test and take the test and get 70 and say, okay, I got 70, I passed, I get a certificate. You could do that. Or you could take the program and participate in the program and probably learn a whole lot more and score much higher and, as a result, be much smarter for having taken the whole course. And that's what I would encourage folks to do, is make sure that they make enough time in their life to commit to actually learning and learning well how to do the job of the officer or the supervisor's position that they're applying for. And the last thing that I'd want to put out as a word of caution to somebody wanting to be in a position of supervision is be careful what you wish for, because it just might come true. Being in positions of supervision, while it might pay more and it might appear to be more glamorous, if that's the right word, as you take on more responsibility, your workload increases, your headaches increase, the challenges increase, expectations from other people increase, and you have to be sure that along with the good, and there's much good also from taking positions of greater responsibility, but along with that, you have a balanced perspective and realize that that there are also new and unexpected challenges come your way as you get promoted as well. So, you know, take a balanced perspective on it, and if you're not really sure what it means to be an officer, go talk to some of the officers and ask them, say, what do you like the most and what do you dislike the most about being an officer? And hear what they have to say, and I'd encourage you to get a variety of people's perspectives so you're not just getting one person's point of view. And then weigh that out and balance for yourself if it is something that you want to do. You know, I think about, like, you know, married life. You know, if you ask one person, what do you think about married life? Now, if you ask the wrong person, you might come away with a feeling that being married is something you'd never want to do, because maybe that person hasn't had such a great experience with it. But as you start to ask more and more people, you might find that there's a more balanced perspective about, you know, the what people think are, you know, the good and the bad about being, you know, married or in a committed relationship or having families or, you know, sharing time and income and household expenses and all the things that go along with being married. But the more people you bring into it, the more balanced the perspective is going to be, and then that will help you make a good decision about if it's something that is truly right for you.
Okay, Chief, and you know, you talk about talking with the other officers, you know, to see, you know, what their roles are, what their feelings are, or, you know, making the transition from officer to firefighter, etc. What do you think about the mentorship? If this department doesn't have, like, a formal program for that, is it something worth talking to a lieutenant or a captain, you know, saying, here I am, I'm interested in moving up the ranks in a few years, and, you know, is it a rite of if I ask you to be my mentor. Is that another way to go? And what are some things that you would recommend that they ask of the person that they're hoping will kind of guide them through the process?
Yep. Well, my response to that might end up being surprising for you, Pete, and for the listeners. And that is, I think that everyone should have a mentor. I have mentors. Now, I'm a fire chief of 18 years, and I still have mentors. I still have people that I turn to and depend on to help develop me to a higher level, to challenge me to be even better tomorrow than I am today, and maybe not, you know, literally in 24 hours, but to challenge me to continue to strive and struggle to achieve more, to contribute more, to learn more, to be smarter and better at what I do. We can't be static in the fire service. We're always going to be in an environment that's changing and challenging us. And I think everyone, from the newest firefighter all the way through to the fire chief, should have a mentor or more than one, a couple of mentors, somebody that is that they respect, somebody that they think represents the direction that they want to go. You know, so that if you want to be forward and progressive and moving your career along, don't hitch your wagon to somebody who isn't that way, because they're not going to be able to push you and help you progress. So you got to, when you're out there looking for a mentor, look for somebody who you could look at and say, they represent what I want to be someday, and I want to learn from them how to be what they are. And it seems like they're a moving target, and they never sit still, and they're always progressing, and they're always involved in this and doing that, and they're always going to school, and they're always learning, and attach yourself to somebody like that. Now, don't wait around for somebody to say to you, hey, I'd like to be your mentor. That's probably not going to happen, because those really shaker and mover type people are busy folks. So, you know, it's kind of like if you wait for a train to come to think the train's going to come to a stop so you can jump on, those kind of people represent the train that ain't stopping. It ain't even slowing down. You're going to have to pick up your pace, run, and jump on the train and hold on. And you're going to have to go to those folks and say, I'd like for you to be my mentor, and here's what I'm needing to have happen to help me develop. And I'm willing to work really hard, and I'd like for you to coach me and give me encouragement and meet with me and give me feedback and keep me on track to my development plan and challenge me, question me, you know, when I need it, kick me in the butt and keep me moving ahead in my career. And I think everybody in the fire service should have a mentor, regardless of your position, somebody who is there to help you get to the next level.
Okay, that's pretty good. Everybody, I guess, from the firefighter all the way up, even the, you know, the probationary firefighter through the chief, should really have somebody. So that's some pretty good advice. I hope everybody takes back. You're not going to learn everything by yourself, and you definitely need to look elsewhere, and even outside the department too. I would guess is a good idea to get thought processes from other operations.
Oh, absolutely. We handcuff ourselves if we think that the only folks who can teach and mentor us are from within the fire service. There are a lot of really smart people out there, especially as you get if you're wanting to progress yourself up into positions of supervision. There are a lot of really smart people out there in other vocations who could mentor us and help us develop our leadership abilities. We would be putting blinders on if we limited our search for these people to within the fire department or within the fire service.
All right, Rich, thank you very much. That was some very enlightening thoughts as to some of the issues that a chief officer and a regular old fire officer can come up with almost on a daily basis in a firehouse, I'm sure. For everybody listening, if you do have any questions for Chief Gassaway, or any comments or suggestions, please drop us an email to podcast@firehouse.com. We'd love to hear from you, and Rich is always looking for some for some challenges from the listeners of the show. And if you do check out the firehouse.com poll the first week that this show was posted, you will notice that the poll has to do with mentoring in the fire service. So if you could just take a quick scroll down the webpage there, on the homepage, I'm sorry, and click out your thoughts on the mentorship program, I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much. We'll look forward to having everybody here again on the Leader's Toolbox.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.